We are back to trying our midweek shows, and with enough support, we can make this permanent. So definitely take the time to show your support by subscribing, sharing, and liking, and interacting with this content. But getting into it, Trump has given us a lot to talk about this week, from the debate last night to his taxes to the meat and potatoes of what this show is going to be about, his platinum plan. So, like I said earlier, let's get into it. This is Lessons from the Screen.
John Boy.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you information about any information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind. We waste our time, our info, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You are welcome. Thank you for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen, and as always, it's sponsored by PacSync. That's PACTSINC.org. PacSync.org is a Black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for Black people in America through education, culture shifts, and economics. You can check them out at the website I said before, www.PACTSINC.org. Remember to leave a review, leave a comment, tell a friend to tell a friend, leave a donation, become a member, take a survey, read a book, do whatever you can to help them, because doing whatever they can to help you. And now, without further ado, let's go ahead and jump right on into it. We are going to start with what occurred last night, the debate, and then we're going to move into the Trump tax situation, and finally we're going to end this show out with the meat and potatoes discussion about Trump's platinum plan for Black Americans. So I'm going to be honest, I'm a bit different when it comes to the debate, especially this go around. I was honestly looking forward to Joe Biden and Donald Trump debates for the exact reason that we saw last night. I absolutely knew without a doubt that it was going to be a clusterfuck, and it was a gigantic one. But I also knew it would be extremely entertaining, and it was very entertaining. And so I laughed till my face hurt. I cried. I was born again. It was exciting. It was revelatory. It was all of the things that you want from a primetime sitcom or drama. And it was excellent. Now, from a political standpoint, it was absolutely horrendous. But from a pure entertainment standpoint, it was hard to find something more entertaining than that. And I'm actually at a point now where I'm thinking I want to do some other things with it. I'm thinking I might want to, you know, dub over it in some kind of way, or use it to just make jokes. The creative side of my brain has been working since the debate started, and it has not shut down yet. I know I want to do something. I just don't know what I want to do, but something is definitely going to occur with regards to me doing something with the footage provided in this debate. So definitely you keep your lookout for that. And I might not drop it. I might just keep it for myself. But it was entertaining. You had Donald Trump, who has an inability to speak the truth, an inability to stay on topic, and an inability to stay quiet, trying to have an adult conversation with Joe Biden, who is also increasingly coming unglued at this entire the prospect of this entire thing. So it was everything you thought it would be. It was two old white men yelling at each other, telling each other to shut up, calling each other stupid. It was a dick measuring contest. It was a quote unquote intelligence contest. It turned into a debate about whose family was better. It basically devolved into what Trump discussions usually devolve into, because here's the deal, right? Trump is actually strategically very sound in what he does. He knew that he could not stand toe-to-toe with Joe Biden in a skill-based boxing match. Joe Biden is too polished, too experienced for Trump. Even with the gaffes that Joe Biden is very much prone to make, he is still too polished and too skilled for Trump to take in a stand-up boxing match of skills. So what does Trump do? He seeks to muddy the waters. He seeks to turn things into a brawl, into a scrap. He seeks to turn things into just a mauling session. Just he wants to make this an ugly fight. Because the uglier the fight looks, the more Joe Biden is off his game, the more prone he is to making mistakes, and the better Trump looks, because that is Trump's element, where he can say whatever he wants to say, where expectations are extremely low, where he's appealing to the lowest common denominator, and where he can knock Joe Biden off of his block just enough to where it causes people to second guess not only Joe Biden, but the entire Democratic establishment, the entire American governmental establishment, which allows him to continue to play the role of victim, which allows him to continue to maintain his fan base, his supporters. So that's what we're dealing with Trump. And that's exactly what he did last night. And he executed his strategy masterfully. And I know a lot of people, a lot of pundits, a lot of strategists, a lot of experts are going to say that Joe Biden won the debate. And technically speaking, I guess he stayed on topic. So it's kind of like, you know, you're taking a test and somebody writes their name on a paper and the other person doesn't. Well, the person that wrote their name is going to get the higher score simply because we know who it is. Joe Biden answered questions and Trump didn't. Now, he kind of gave some answers, but he didn't really answer anything. So, but, you know, one thing I did want to draw attention to is that Trump was very smooth last night. Like, let's not play about it. When he was pressed to disown or to discredit or to speak out against white supremacists, he spun out of that brilliantly. I mean, he was so smooth with it. I mean, if you check out the post I made on Facebook, like, I still stand by that. He spun out of that smoother than Uncle Leroy doing the electric slide at a family barbecue. It was clean how he swung out of that. I mean, he was like, yo, I'll denounce anybody you want me to. Who do you want me to denounce? And they were like, the white supremacists, the alt-right. And he was like, okay, pick one. And they gave him one. And he was like, well, I'll tell you what, though, Antifa. And he spun clean, smooth out of that thing. Boy, that was a sight to behold. But regularly, he was spinning out of answering hard questions, even with the taxes. With the taxes thing, he just outright lied. And that is actually a perfect segue into that, because I'm probably going to talk more about this debate later. Right now, I just watched it last night. I need to process it, probably need to watch it again, but I did want to hint on it. But like I said, the taxes thing opens a perfect segue into the tax discussion. So with regards to Trump and his taxes and the $750 that the New York Times expose claimed that he paid in 2016. And look, I'm gonna be real. I expected this. I'm actually surprised he paid anything in income tax. I expected that he wouldn't have paid anything in income taxes. And I think one of the reasons why he was fighting to keep his taxes secret is because twofold. One, he didn't want to reveal the losses or the fact that he wasn't as wealthy as he claims to have been. And it's well documented and well known at this point that Donald Trump has been overstating his wealth for decades. But the other thing is just that he didn't want people to know that he wasn't paying any income taxes. It hurts his image as a working class American. It's hurt his image and the brand that he's built up. So the fact that he hasn't paid any taxes is really not a surprise to me. The fact that he brags about avoiding paying taxes, as he did in the debate briefly last night, is really not a surprise to me. These are things that should have been understood, that this was his thinking, because this is the thinking of a lot of people. If they can get out of paying taxes, they will. And Donald Trump is no exception to that. So the fact that his taxes were what they were was not anything spectacular. The fact that he's lost as much money as he's lost really wasn't a surprise to me either, because Donald Trump is on record, on plenty of records, not just, and we don't need his taxes to confirm this. Donald Trump does not make very successful business moves. Literally and nearly everything he's touched has fallen apart. He's being held up by what amounts to the gold standard of social welfare programs, where banks have designated him as too big to fail, too valuable to cut off. So he continues to have access to credit without having to pay for not being a responsible financial steward, fiscal steward, not being fiscally responsible. And that's what we're dealing with Trump. The name has become so big that he's being protected by the very institutions that he's hurting. So this is not anything as well that was surprising or, you know, like disconcerting or like alarming. The tax situation was things that I felt like should have been expected. So with that being said, though, there is this elephant in the room about, is it okay to avoid paying taxes? Look, I'm of the mindset, I'm one of the few people I know that actually thinks that people should not view paying taxes as a bad thing. We all take advantage of various government programs, various social programs, various government infrastructure designs. We like driving on roads. We like walking on sidewalks. We like having parks to go to. We like having working streetlights. We like all of these things that we get in our daily lives. All of these things are funded by taxes. All of the programs that we like, all of the things we like to do. Most everything in American society is touched in some way, shape, or form by paying your taxes. So I don't understand why people get excited at the prospect of not paying their taxes, not paying their fair share. If you are somebody that takes advantage of any part of American life, that participates in any part of American life, whether you like the government or the system or not, is irrelevant. Do you take part in any part of American life? If the answer to that is yes, then you should not have a problem with paying your taxes, and you should not have a problem with paying your fair share. Now, what you should also do to pair that up is be involved politically so that you can be a part of the decision-making process with regards to where your tax dollars go. But you should not be excited about not paying taxes. That's like having somebody cook food for you and then being excited about finding ways not to pay for it. You know, that's like having somebody do something for you and then being excited about finding ways not to compensate them for what they've done. Paying taxes is how we keep things going. Paying taxes is how we're going to get to where we need to be. And even if this was a government, like, you know, a lot of us in the black community talk about being a nation within a nation and building a nation within a nation and having support groups and things like that. Like, the mindset that these people have towards taxes is the same mindset they bring into these organizational developments when it comes to expending money. If somebody doesn't want to pay the government for services that they utilize on a daily basis, they're not going to pay another organization to do something that they think should happen, but that currently they don't partake in. And that's just how I feel about it. So, and it's been borne out by personal experience. That's just the way people work. So the whole excitement aspect of not paying taxes when you take advantage of the things that taxes pay for is not something to be celebrated in America. I feel like it's celebrated far too frequently. You should be happy to pay your taxes. You really should be. And I know that's a strong word, but I feel like you should really be happy to pay your taxes. The same as you're happy to spend money on a new car, or you're happy to spend money on a house, or you're happy to spend money on all of these other things. Those things, especially the house, those purchases are made possible in part by the taxes that other people are paying. The education that you're happy to pay for your degrees, those things are made possible by the taxes that people are paying. They're cheapened to an extent. They'd be cheapened to a larger extent if schools weren't being very greedy about the profit margins, but that's neither here nor there right now. But you should be somebody that's willing to, able, and understanding enough to be at least amicable and friendly towards paying your taxes. But the amount of people that are trying to figure out how to get out of paying taxes, that just boggles the mind. And then they wonder why there aren't enough programs in certain communities or in certain places. And I know that as well is a conversation for another day, one that we will probably get into at some point on one of these days. But it's not one we're going to get into today, because since we're talking about the community infrastructure and things of that nature, that offers a perfect segue into the meat and bones discussion of this show, Trump's Platinum Plan. So there's been a lot of talk in the black community about Trump's impact on the community, and while his pandering doesn't seem to be met with the same level of cynicism or criticism in some circles as Democratic pandering, Trump is arguably the biggest panderer in politics today. He panders to literally everyone. But with the release of his Platinum Plan, which contains his pillars and promises to black America, there seems to be even more talk about just how stupid Trump thinks black people actually are and how stupid many black people seem to be. Let's start with his pillars because that's where he started. Opportunity, security, prosperity, and fairness. Now, with regards to opportunity, he says, by achieving historic employment levels for black Americans, as well as increasing access to capital for new businesses, President Trump has been committed to ensuring all black Americans can achieve the American dream. Now, the fact of the matter is, this has been debunked time and time again, and while unemployment numbers are at or were at historic lows, even if the numbers being tracked makes them virtually useless in comparison to different eras and the numbers that were produced in previous times, Trump in no way can take credit for this. The numbers started their rapid decline in 2011, 2012, and I'm not an expert at what presidents do, but I'm pretty sure that President Obama was in office at that time. The decline hasn't sped up during Trump's time in office, and an argument could be made that in the 4 years before 2016, there was a faster decline than in the 4 years after. Similar to the same claim that has been made and verified repeatedly, that in the 3 years before Trump took office, there were more jobs created than there were in the 3 years after Trump took office. So in any case, this all points to the fact that Trump has done absolutely nothing to change unemployment in the black community in a positive way, which makes sense because presidents don't have that kind of power, which is why most presidents don't take credit for the economy, not in the same way that Trump has. The other reason they don't is because of what happened the first part of this year, where all the gains made in reducing black unemployment were eliminated as black unemployment rose back above 15%. And we know that it never really left that number for various communities all across the country. But still, we'll stick to the Department of Bureau, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics numbers, because that's what everyone goes off of. But anyways, the numbers rose back above 15%. And if he's going to take credit for the positives, then he has to eat the negatives, whether it's his fault or not. And a strong argument could be made that this COVID-induced spike is very much his fault. But that's another show as well. So Trump has done nothing for the black community economically, with the exception of not reversing the gains made by his predecessor. And even that is something that can no longer be claimed, as the community economically at this point is in the same place that it was in before Obama took office. Now, I did a show on my podcast called The Road to Zero Wealth, based on a report by a nonprofit group. And that is something that Trump has not changed. And that report basically said that by the year 2050, if things aren't changed, the black community will have a net wealth of zero. But he also hasn't changed the less than 5% rate that black businesses receive SBA loans, nor has he changed the predatory lending that the black community still suffers through. And the list goes on and on of all the systemic ills that he could at least talk to that he hasn't touched. And instead of attempting to touch these things or to even use the bully pulpit to talk about these things, he just lies about what he has done while behind the scenes moving in the completely opposite direction. Claiming opportunity as a pillar with his track record is an insult to the community he is talking to. And I mean a direct and literal insult. So the next thing Trump talks about is security. And he says that by signing into law the celebrated First Step Act, President Trump has brought common sense criminal justice reform to the American people for the first time in decades, while ensuring that our streets and communities are safe for families and business owners. And so again, we broke down the First Step episode, the First Step Act, in an episode on the podcast, but this law did not change the arrest rate. It did not minimize conviction rates. It did not stop negative police interaction. It did not reduce the penalties to being convicted. And the single biggest problem with identifying it as a win for the black community specifically is that it only applies to federal crimes. Federal criminals are more likely to be white collar criminals, and only 1 in 6 or 17% of black convictions were federal convictions. The overwhelming majority of black people, 83%, are facing state crimes. Beyond that, hate crimes against black people have continued to increase under Trump's administration, something that started to rise with the election of Barack Obama. He has constantly expressed support for the murderers of black people. He has constantly encouraged and supported alt-right and white supremacist factions. He has constantly threatened and in some cases actually ordered violence against black people and those calling for change. The protest clearing incident comes to mind, not to mention the encouraging his crowds at rallies to attack black people disagreeing with him. Trump is a documented and well-known racist that definitely feels a sense of superiority to most Americans, including black people. So the assertion that security is a pillar is another extremely insulting slap in the face to all thinking black people. And so lastly, we got prosperity and fairness, and I'm not going to insert a break in between these two because they're both shorter, because a lot of this is dealing with things that we talked about already with opportunity and security. So for prosperity, he says in his platinum plan, as the first president to provide long-term funding to historically black colleges and universities, I promise I can read, this administration continues to seek immediate and generational advancement for black Americans. Now, while this administration did sign into law the congressionally passed Futures Act, which set aside a permanent $85 million for HBCUs, if we were to split that evenly amongst the more than 100 HBCUs in this country, that amounts to less than $1 million per HBCU, and that permanent funding hardly matches the level of defunding educational and early developmental programs that has gone on under this administration. The budgets coming out of this administration regularly recommends massive cuts to funding for programs that have a positive effect on black communities, like TRIO programs and other after-school programs that focus on inner city and black communities. This one mark does not negate all the bad he has done in terms of the future opportunities for black children to even be college ready in order to take advantage of this increased HBCU funding or this permanent HBCU funding. And what has been happening during COVID certainly undercuts the claim of prosperity, with black people being more likely to die, experiencing higher rates of infections, higher rates of death, having higher rates of unemployment, businesses being more likely to close. There's been a 45% increase in black businesses closures and unemployment claims and things of that nature since COVID started. Meanwhile, he spent the first 4 months of the COVID incident denying that there was even a COVID incident to talk about or to plan for or to prepare for. Prosperity, stop it. Finally, we move on to fairness. And he says that as demonstrated through his actions to initiate investments into opportunity zones, as well as address health disparities, wage gaps, and necessary educational reforms, President Trump works every day to advance a fair and just America for the black community. And look, I'm going to just be blunt with it. This is just stupid and has been addressed basically with the other comments that I've made. But the use of opportunity zones as if it's something that's beneficial to the community. This is basically the government telling the community that gentrification is good for them and they should be happy about it and support it. Not to mention the fact that he ended even the superficial changes made towards sensitivity and diversity training. And this is something that he spoke about even in the debate, where he talked about how he was ending diversity training because he felt like thoughts and conversations about equality were teaching people to hate American and were sick and twisted. This is ridiculousness. This is utter ridiculousness. The fact that he would even attempt to say that he's been fair and just to the black community with everything that's happened under his watch, not even in the years prior to him becoming president, but just in the 3.5 years that he has been president, there has been no semblance of fairness for black people, unless there are black people that are willing to sell out their black communities and their blackness in order to side with him and to be a pawn that he can hold up to say, I'm not racist, even though there's just so much evidence to the contrary. So from there, we move on to President Trump's promises to Black America. Now, he starts out with his promise to Black America with a promise for an increase in capital in Black communities by almost $500 billion. And the fact is that this is based on opportunity zones, which basically translates to $500 billion for white people in Black communities, aka government-sponsored gentrification. With that being said, these are promises regarding potential actions with no real plan behind them, so there isn't really anything to do but read them and give my opinion on them. So, as for the 3 million new jobs for the Black community, there's no indication to suggest that these will be high-paying jobs. There's no indication to suggest that these will be jobs that even offer a livable wages. And there's no indication to suggest that these jobs will actually be fillable. Because there are a lot of people out there right now, a lot of businesses, corporations, and entities out there right now creating jobs that are not going to be filled and never will be filled. And they are creating these jobs just to say that they created these jobs. And that's even worse than the people creating jobs that will not and have no intention of having livable wages attached to them. Creating 500,000 new Black-owned businesses. Well, that's where you run into an interesting scenario, because of the hundreds of thousands of Black-owned businesses that have gone out of business since he's been in office, especially during the COVID pandemic. This is basically him saying, I'm going to give you some of those businesses back. But again, we run into the scenario of he does not have the authority or the capability to do such a thing. How is he going to accomplish this? And this is something we keep in mind. We have to keep in mind with every last single one of these promises. How is he going to accomplish these things? And does the president even have the power and authority to do it? Safe urban neighborhoods with the highest policing standards. Now, we all know Trump has positioned himself as a law and order president, and it's interesting that he would attack Joe Biden last night over the 94 crime bill but at the same time use the same rhetoric that brought the 94 crime bill into existence, which is this positioning of himself as a law and order president. That type of rhetoric was popular rhetoric in the 90s. And it was rhetoric that many people in the Black community felt like was needed, because many people in the Black community felt like crime was out of control in the Black community, especially in the 90s when crime was at the worst that it has been in recent memory. Crime is nowhere near where it was in the 90s nowadays. It has been steadily declining since the end of the 90s. So that is also not something that Trump can take credit for. So, safe urban neighborhoods. Look, to me, looking at the way Trump moves and what Trump means when Trump says certain things, he's not talking about safe urban neighborhoods with the highest policing standards while Black people are living there. He's talking about once the gentrification is complete, he's going to make the community safe for the white people that have moved in or for the non-Black people that have taken control and ownership of those communities. The same could be said with committing to working on a Second Step Act, which it was widely acknowledged that the First Step Act was a stepping stone. But it's also been put out there, documented by certain credible news organizations, that Trump was furious that he didn't see a major uptick in the level of support that he had from the Black community after the First Step Act was passed. So that leaves me with very little faith in thinking that a second step will pass. And based off what is actually in the First Step Act, I really don't think that there's going to be anything in the Second Step Act that's going to be majorly beneficial to Black people. I don't feel like we should have celebrated the first one. The next go around, I don't really see where there's anything, any motivation or anything like that that's going to occur that's going to make the second one happen. And also keep in mind with all of these promises that Trump has been doing a lot of these superficial, memorial, meaningless gestures, executive orders being signed, things of that nature, trying to gear up for winning the second election. Do you really think when he does not have to worry about the Black vote because he can't run again, that he is going to do things for a group of people that historically he has shown a level of disdain for? a level of like nonchalantness, like a level of apathy, and a, I don't give a fuck about him. Of course not. You'd be out of your mind to think that he's even going to attempt to comply with any of these or to complete or agree with any of these promises in any meaningful way for the majority of black people if he wins the second term. If he does comply, my guess would be that he will make good on these promises for a small group of extremely wealthy and influential black people, and the rest of us will be left out in the cold. Access to better education and job training opportunities. And I'm real curious about words like that, opportunities, because that doesn't mean you're actually going to do anything. That means that you're going to tell people that different things are available, but the standard and the selection criteria for them to be able to have access to these opportunities is not talked about, and leads me to believe that it's not going to be something that's available for black people. Giving black churches the ability to compete for federal grants and federal resources for their community. Black churches already have the ability to compete for federal resources for their communities. Black churches are some of the wealthiest institutions in the black community. I would argue that black churches are wealthier than HBCUs, and between the two of them, they are the largest institutions, organized institutions in the community. Black churches have the ability to compete for federal resources. But beyond that, why do we want black churches competing for federal resources? Because at that point, they become beholden to the federal government and not the communities that they serve. And that's been a problem all along. And maybe we will do a show on the fact that churches, by IRS code, do not have to get a 501c3 designation to be tax exempt. And by getting that 501c3 exemption form or that status on a church, you are in fact agreeing to certain restrictions to what you can say and what you can do and how you can move that you otherwise would not have to consider. And it wouldn't even be it's not even necessary, because like I said, spiritual institutions, churches, are by their very nature tax exempt in America. But that being said, this to me reads like I'm going to get more churches and more black pastors, more black spiritual leaders to sell out their community in order to stand next to me and be considered a good little boy. That's how I read that, because that's what history, that's what evidence shows us is going to happen, because that's what has happened. So then he says to bring better and tailored health care to address historic disparities. Trump has not done anything for that that has been remotely positive for black people. On the one hand, he's saying he wants to fight against, or he wants to protect pre-existing conditions. And on the other hand, he came in office and he continues behind the backs of his followers and everybody else to fight in the Supreme Court to overturn pre-existing conditions, to overturn policies that would require tailor-made healthcare options that do address historic disparities. This is a bold-faced lie that in order for him to even accomplish, like several of these other things, he would have to go back on his word to other communities that he actually cares about, and he would actually have to go back on his on policies and statements that he's been very, very, very brash about prior to. Now, we know Trump is a liar, and going back on his word is not really a big deal for him, but usually when he goes back on his word, he's going back on his word to save face with his base. Black people are not his base. He is not going to go back on his word to save face with you. In fact, going back on his word to black people would in fact be saving face to the white people that support him. Many in the alt-right, many of the white supremacists. So an immigration policy that protects American jobs. He's not talking about black jobs. Advance home ownership opportunities and enhance financial literacy in the black community. We've seen no indication of a willingness or even a desire to do this. There have been how many cases come out nationally just in the past 2 years of predatory lending continuing in black communities, virtual redlining still existing. And Trump has at no point wanted to step in, because in order for him to step in and do these things, he would have to introduce some level of financial regulation. And Trump has made his entire policy based on deregulating as many industries as he can and pulling back as many Obama era regulations as he can, because his policy has been and continues to be to erase the legacy of Barack Obama. Now, then he goes on to talk about onshore manufacturing to advance jobs and develop opportunities for black-owned businesses. That's just a bold-faced lie. The only onshoring jobs that Trump is interested in increasing is the onshoring jobs in the rural white areas and the white areas where white people are, the areas of the city where white people are struggling. He's not bringing manufacturing jobs to the inner city. He's not bringing manufacturing jobs to predominantly black areas. He's not even really bringing jobs back to the cities, which is where most black people congregate. Trump is talking about bringing back these jobs to rural white America. And the way he words this, he's going to say that black people have the opportunity to get involved in these manufacturing situations when in fact it's just paper opportunity. It's not real. It's not accessible. And therefore, it should not be something that black people celebrate. So then he goes into the last page of his document where he lays out some other key points that he wants to talk about: black economic empowerment and access to capital, which is a bold-faced lie. He, you know, jobs, 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 not for blacks, not for blacks, not for blacks, and the ones for blacks, yeah, they're not going to be ones that are paying livable wages. But there are a couple of these things in here that I want to hit on. He keeps mentioning this $500 billion investment into black communities, and like I said, that's the opportunity zones, that's gentrification. He claims he wants to grow minority-owned businesses with additional tax cuts to stimulate hiring and investments. It's been shown that tax cuts for businesses do not stimulate the economy in the way that Trump keeps pretending like they do. But also pay attention to the wording there: minority-owned businesses. This is his plan to black America. And he's talking about minority-owned businesses. You know who is a minority? White women. Look forward to them to continue to make a huge come up with all of these other things. Then he makes a lot of claims about examining barriers. Don't be fooled by the language. Examining just means I'm going to look at it. It doesn't mean I'm actually going to do anything. He's talking about investing almost $20 billion towards broadband and internet access to create opportunities, jobs, improve connectivity, and utilize telehealth services. Again, this is to enhance the communities for the incoming gentrification, fueling access to black capital for black-owned businesses. And then he makes a lot of points here, which basically all amount to nothing, because there's nothing in this plan that illustrates how he's going to accomplish any of these things. And I could actually go through every last single one of these bullets and rip it to shred based on things that he has done during his time as presidency. Education African Americans can choose. So he has talked about being a fan of school choice. But if you're being honest, all of these schools teach from very similar curriculums. He's not backing any pro-black or African-centered, black American-centered education policies that would require curriculum to be developed specifically for black people in America, because he feels like that would cause people to hate Americans. And we know he feels that way because he said as much. So, again, he talks about prosperous black communities. Now, one interesting thing he talks about is he wants to make Juneteenth a national holiday. Now, I want to harp on this for just a second, because out of all of the other stuff he says, we've kind of talked about those things before and how they're either not real or not really for the black community, or his track record goes completely against it. This idea that before we get into the Juneteenth, because I want the Juneteenth thing to be the last thing I talk about, he talks about wanting to prosecute the KKK and Antifa as terrorists. Now, this comes from a man who last night in the debate refused to condemn white supremacists or members of the KKK. That's what we're talking about. And there are other places in here where he talks about introducing regulations to certain communities, certain sectors, and certain industries. And again, this is a president who has built himself off of deregulating as much as he can, as quickly as he can. But we're going to get to this Juneteenth thing. Making Juneteenth a national holiday is not black progress, and that is not something that shows any level of respect for black people. Juneteenth is a way, in my opinion, for white people, making that a national holiday is a way for white people to say, look at how benevolent we are, how nice we are. Because what is Juneteenth? Juneteenth is the day that the last of the slaves in Texas found out, in fact, that they had been, quote unquote, freed. They had already been freed months prior, but they didn't find out until some white people rode in town, military garrison unit, Union soldiers rode into a town in Texas and told them that you are, in fact, free. This doesn't acknowledge what black people have done in this country. It doesn't acknowledge the sacrifices black people have made. It doesn't acknowledge the struggle and the fight that black people engaged in to free themselves. It doesn't acknowledge any sort of black contribution whatsoever. This is not a day that you can say we made it a national holiday and black people should be happy for. This is a day that black people, in my opinion, can acknowledge as being a significant day, an important day. I didn't say it was good or bad in terms of its significance or its importance, but it is a significant and important day. But make no mistake about it, this is a day that white people should be celebrating, because this is the day when they finally showed themselves to be tolerant. This is the day when they finally showed themselves to be above slavery. So why should this be something that is a big deal for black people? Basically giving black people something to celebrate that is in fact and in actuality a way of recognizing white benevolence. And I know some people are going to be like, whoa, you twisted the hell out of that. No, I really didn't. What you've been doing this entire time, in my opinion, when you go out of your way to talk about how amazing of a day Juneteenth is and how black people everywhere should be celebrating Juneteenth, never mind the fact that if you weren't in Texas, there's no real reason for you to celebrate, because in various communities all over the nation, there was still slavery going on all the way into the 1960s, the 1950s and 60s. So why do we celebrate Juneteenth? Because it is a day that's recognized by white people. It's the day when they finally told the last bastion of slavery that they recognized that slavery was not good. And they told the slaves that they could leave, pretty much ending the conflict caused during the civil rights, or ending the conflict that was the war of secession. Stop it. That's not a day that black people should celebrate. It's a day that black people should recognize. That's my opinion. But I'm interested in your opinion. Let me know what you think about the Trump Platinum Package. Let me know what you think about everything that I discussed. Let me know what you think about Juneteenth. The reason I wanted that to be the last topic is because I was interested in what you guys would think about my personal view on Juneteenth. So I look forward to seeing you guys. We're going to drop another show on Saturday where we're going to be getting back to HR 748, and I will see you next week. This is Lessons from the Screen.
John Boy.
So thank you guys for listening to the show, to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you always enjoy it. Remember, you can check out all of the shows. All of them are going to be only found on the Freedom Train Network. That's www.freedomtrainradio.com. And that goes, again, for all of the shows on the network. You can only find all of the shows available for all of the shows on the network on Freedom Train website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. So go there and check them out. You only get the latest 25 shows, I believe, on the podcast directories. So check us out. Show support for all of the shows we have. Shelby's World, Enigma, Self Hour, The Fix, Sports Podcast, Freedom Train Podcast Series, and all of the other shows that are around. Definitely go and show them love. As for this show in particular, you can check us out. Support us on Patreon.com. That's patreon.com/LFTS. That's patreon.com/LFTS. And there you can drop us. You can show support by sponsoring the show, giving us money every month, giving us money per episode, And just letting us know that you support us. And by doing such things, you allow us to be able to spend more time creating and composing the shows. Shows like this series and shows like a lot of the series that we do take a lot of time to put together. We're talking about hours upon hours upon hours of research. And it'd be nice to be able to take the time to do those shows and do them correctly the way we really want to do them. And also to be able to do them more frequently, because a lot of these shows should probably be done a lot more frequently. So, love you. See you next week. Hope you have fun.